They did focus groups only with people who voted conservative for the first time, and in those areas where the conservatives made gains. What they found was that nobody in these focus groups supported reopening the equal marriage issue. You want to talk
to me, so come on. Have you stopped believing, and have you stopped having some kind of, passion and compassion, then you just may as well give up.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. A Portuguese lesbian couple courts marriage equality, queers calculate the impact of Canada's conservative conversion, and a small-town boy evolves musically and politically. Those stories and more this week now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Sherry Lunn.
And I'm John Beaupre.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending February 4th, 2006. The fight for marriage equality came to Portugal this week as a lesbian couple very publicly applied for a license to wed. There were dozens of cameras rolling at the Lisbon Registry Office when Helena Peixão and Teresa Pires submitted their application. While it wasn't immediately rejected, as the couple had expected, it was the next day. It's on the basis of constitutional bans on sexual orientation and sex discrimination that the women will challenge the denial of their marriage license. A senior government official in Lisbon said civil law, which doesn't recognize same-gender marriages, takes precedence. But the couple's lawyer, Luis Rodriguez, said he will take their case to the highest Portuguese courts and, if necessary, to the European Court of Human Rights. Portugal did enact legislation in 2001 that gives same-gender couples certain legal, tax, and property rights. The ruling socialist government has said changes to the law are not on its agenda. Recent opinion polls indicate that a majority in Portugal don't want their country to follow the lead of also predominantly Roman Catholic neighbor Spain, which enacted marriage equality legislation last year.
Last month, Britain became the latest country to recognize same-gender unions in the form of civil partnerships, which grant marriage equality, in all but name, to gay and lesbian couples. Sonia Gould and Vanessa Haydock, both privates in the Royal Logistics Corps, this week became the first queer couple in the British Army to exchange vows. Two Royal Air Force women became the first same-gender couple in the British military to civilly unite in December. As an equal opportunities employer, said a spokesperson for the Ministry of Defense this week, we are pleased that serving personnel who are registered in a same-sex relationship now have equal rights to those enjoyed by married couples. It was only in February 2000 that the ban on gays and lesbians serving in the British military was lifted.
In Sydney this week, Barbara Yap and Lorraine Jones became the first same-gender pair in Australia to register their British civil union. Britain's new civil partnership law enables any queer couple in Australia to wed as long as one of the pair is a British national, as is Jones. A British High Commission spokesperson said qualifying same-gender couples in Australia could apply through their nearest consular agency. The British Home Office has even introduced a civil partnership visa for gay and lesbian couples who are traveling to Britain specifically to marry. Britain will also recognize queer couples in Tasmania who have registered their relationships under that state's limited civil unions law. While civil partnerships are not recognized in Australia, which recently banned legal recognition of same-gender unions, they will be in force in England if a couple wishes to move there.
The upper chamber of the Czech Parliament voted late last month to grant some legal rights to same-gender couples, but there were reports this week that the measure would be rejected by President Václav Klaus. The legislation would allow couples who register their partnerships to have inheritance and health care rights similar to those granted to heterosexual married couples. Representatives of 10 Christian churches in the Czech Republic called on the president to veto the legislation, warning that it would weaken family life and cause chaos in values, mainly in the young generation.
But queer couples have won victories in two U.S. states. Last week, California's Third Appellate District Court upheld the state's domestic partnership laws that grant many of the rights of marriage to gay and lesbian couples. Several right-wing groups have challenged those laws up the judicial ladder, but this appears to be the final ruling. Lambda Legal, the American Civil Liberties Union, and the National Center for Lesbian Rights were among the advocacy groups defending the domestic partnership laws. Lambda Legal Senior Counsel Jennifer Pizer said that this decision brings to an end years of wasted court resources brought about by a fringe group of people opposed to even the most basic protections for thousands of California families headed by same-sex couples.
And Maryland's democratically controlled House of Delegates this week rejected a state constitutional amendment to ban recognition of same-gender marriages. Republican Don Dwyer proposed the amendment after a Baltimore Circuit Court judge struck down Maryland's anti-queer marriage law last month. His colleagues say they aren't giving up on enacting a marriage-banning amendment, and Republican Governor Robert Ehrlich has already said he plans to appeal the Baltimore judge's ruling to the state's highest court.
Religious conservative darling Samuel Alito was confirmed this week to sit on the U.S. Supreme Court. Alito, who, as a young lawyer, opposed a woman's right to choose and queer rights, now says he will approach the issues with an open mind. The vote was mostly along party lines in the Republican-controlled Senate. Alito replaces retiring moderate Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, who had often been the court's swing vote on significant social issues. With the Supreme Court confirmation of Judge Alito, warned the human rights campaign's Joel Solmanese, Americans are threatened with an unprecedented erosion of our rights. The National Gay and Lesbian Task Force's Matt Foreman called the confirmation a devastating blow to individual rights, civil liberties, and equal justice under law in America. But according to Lambda Legal's Kevin Cathcart, though there is much to be concerned about, our Supreme Court victories remain good law, and we will continue to win in state and federal courts. It's worth noting that a majority of the current justices issued lesbi-gay favorable decisions in two recent landmark Supreme Court cases, 1995's Romer v. Evans ruling an anti-queer state amendment in Colorado to be unconstitutional, and the decriminalization of sodomy in Lawrence v. Texas in 2003.
Aside from getting his Alito appointment confirmed, it's been a pretty tough second term so far for U.S. President George W. Bush. His Republican Party is reeling from a growing corruption scandal, the Iraq War is not going well, and his popularity remains low in most recent polls. In his annual State of the Union address, along with bizarrely asking Congress to pass legislation to prohibit the creation of human-animal hybrids, the president equated same-gender marriage with crooked politicians and promised to appoint judges who will presumably stop both. Many Americans, especially parents, still have deep concerns about the direction of our culture and the health of our most basic institutions, he said. They're concerned about unethical conduct by public officials and discouraged by activist courts that try to redefine marriage. All of the major U.S. queer advocacy groups condemned the president's remarks, but right-wing conservative groups loved them. Family Research Council President Tony Perkins said he was encouraged by the progress the president has made in appointing judges who are servants of the law and who refuse to legislate from the bench. Perkins also said that marriage is a concern that cannot be left to the courts. He'll therefore applaud Raw Stories' report this week that the Senate's Republican leadership will take another stab at passing a constitutional ban on same-gender marriage, the so-called Marriage Protection Amendment, sometime this year. As for their precise political timing, cynics may point to U.S. federal elections being held this November.
The brutal attack at a New Bedford, Massachusetts gay bar this week underscored queer advocates' push for congressional passage of languishing GLBT federal hate crimes legislation. After confirming that Puzzle's Lounge was a gay bar, an axe-wielding, gun-toting teenager badly sliced one customer's head and face and shot him, and then shot two others in the back and chest, police said. All three victims remain hospitalized, with at least one in critical condition. Authorities describe 18-year-old suspect Jacob Robita, in whose bedroom they found Nazi and anti-Semitic posters and literature, as violent, armed, and dangerous. He was wanted on suspicion of three counts of attempted murder and violating the state's hate crimes law. A candlelight vigil outside the bar the following night drew more than 150 people, including Mayor Scott Lang, who described the attacks as a crime against everyone in this city. A city councilor read a statement from openly gay U.S. Congressmember Barney Frank, whose district includes New Bedford, saying he was heartbroken and outraged.
And finally, outrage of another sort is being expressed by some religious conservatives over the casting of an openly gay man in an evangelical production company's new movie. Christian ministers were reportedly enthusiastic following sneak previews of End of the Spear, made by Every Tribe Entertainment. But an uproar over their casting of openly gay actor and activist Chad Allen in the lead role seems to have all but eclipsed the movie itself. It chronicles the true story of five American missionaries who were killed in 1956 by an indigenous tribe in Ecuador. The missionaries' families eventually converted the tribe to Christianity and forgave the killers. Allen plays one of the slain missionaries and later his grown son. Every Tribe Entertainment expected a supportive reception from evangelicals who have long been inspired by the story's message of hope and redemption. But an assistant pastor at a Baptist church in Denver, Colorado, joined a chorus of online protests charging that the casting of Allen would be like Madonna playing the Virgin Mary, and that we must realize that the Christian message and the messenger are intricately related. For his part, however, Allen told the CNN headline news program Showbiz Tonight,
I said, I want to go in and talk with the director and the producers, make sure that they understand who I am, I understand who they are. I wanted to know where the money was coming from and where it was going so that I could make sure it wasn't ever going to be used to hurt someone like me. And it was the most incredible experience. The director looked at me and he said, look, we know. And he said, there may be people on your side of this that aren't too happy with you wanting to work with us, and there definitely may be people on our side that aren't too happy that we want to work with you, but isn't that all the more reason why we should do it? He said, let's walk together hand in hand and show that we can respect each other's differences and we can love each other and we can create together, and that's what we've done. It's an incredible movie. I'm very proud of it.
That's News Wrap for the week ending February 4th, 2006, written this week by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm Sherry Ludd.
Updating that Massachusetts gay bar bashing story, 18-year-old suspect Jacob Robita is dead. After 3 days on the run, he was cornered and shot by Arkansas police soon after he'd killed an officer during a routine traffic stop. Robita's 33-year-old woman passenger from West Virginia, who police said the teenager met online, was also killed during the shootout. You'll hear how Bronski Beat's former frontman has evolved as a musician and a gay activist later in the program. It's been a banner decade for gays, lesbians, and bisexuals in Canada. It started back in 1996 when the federal government outlawed discrimination based on sexual orientation. It peaked last year when the country became the fourth in the world to legalize same-gender marriage. But the future of LGBT rights seemed in doubt last month as the country headed into a January 23rd federal election. The Queer Positive Liberal Party, which had ruled the country for almost 13 years, seemed destined to go down to defeat to the one party in the country that has opposed marriage equality, the Conservatives. This Way Out correspondent Heather Kitching offers some post-elections analysis.
There was an ominous feeling in the air as we Canadians inched towards our federal election. The Liberal Party, the one that delivered queers our equality, had been plagued by scandal after scandal. Meanwhile, the Conservative Party, whose MPs have voted against every gay-positive piece of legislation since 1994, was leading in the polls. This is the same party whose members have derided the Charter of Rights, said that homosexuality should be recriminalized, and suggested that it's okay for blacks and gays to have to work at the back of the shop. Was Canada going crazy? Was it just an illusion that we were a tolerant nation that cared about human rights? I mean, sure, the Liberals misappropriated $100 million, but what's more important here? On Election Day, however, it wasn't as bad as we thought it would be. The Conservatives won the election, but only just, with 124 of 308 seats in the House of Commons. The Liberals held on to 103, the left-wing New Democratic Party increased to 29, and the Quebec Separatist Party, the Bloc Québécois, took 51. That means the majority of seats in the House are still held by parties that support equal marriage.
I think this is a very good turn of events for Canada. Clearly the country wanted change, and I think they chose wisely in that they didn't give the Conservatives a complete majority.
Gary Mitchell is that rare breed, a gay man, who is also an organizer in the Conservative Party of Canada.
There's a lot of people in the party that have never, well, most of them have never been in government. Rather than do the typical, which Canadians are very famous for, you know, boot the bums out and replace it with a full majority, policies aside, it doesn't make much sense when you have a lot of newcomers. So I think that's one reason why I'm pleased. Another reason I'm pleased is that it's going to keep some of the people that you've referred to in check.
Another positive aspect of the election result is that the Conservative Party had to seriously moderate its image in order to score even the small margin of victory that it achieved last month. Party members are notorious for making outrageous public statements about gay rights, abortion, and even race issues, and it's believed to have cost them the election in 2004. This time, Harper is alleged to have muzzled his candidates, barring any public comments on controversial social issues. And although he announced his plan to revisit same-sex marriage on the very first day of the campaign, even then the party seemed determined to keep the issue low-key. Lori Aaron is the Director of Advocacy for EGAL Canada, the country's queer lobby group.
He downplayed as much as he could. He tried to get it out early and avoid discussing it. He put out 112 press releases. Not one of them mentioned reopening the equal marriage debate. It was tucked into their 46-page platform as far down as it could go and as small a blurb as it could be.
It's perhaps not surprising, then, that Aaron goes on to say,
what we saw was that there was actually no pattern. When you look at the changes in this election, the equal marriage issue didn't seem to be related to the results. In other words, whether someone was for or against equal marriage doesn't seem to have had any sort of systemic result. It's also interesting, there were some focus groups done last week by a group called Navigator in Toronto, which actually the principals represent all three Federalist parties. They did focus groups only with people who voted Conservative for the first time and in those areas where the Conservatives made gains. What they found was that nobody in these focus groups supported reopening the equal marriage issue.
Although Aaron says there was no overall relationship between same-sex marriage and the election results, two races in British Columbia saw particularly homophobic Conservatives go down to defeat. Richmond candidate Daryl Reid and North Vancouver candidate Cindy Silver are both former staffers of Focus on the Family, who have been heavily involved in the battle against same-sex marriage. Silver, in particular, was widely expected to win the riding, but ended up being defeated by a larger margin than the previous Conservative candidate in the last election. All the same, Harper's victory, even of a minority government, does mean that the same-sex marriage issue is back on the table. I asked Gary Mitchell how he thinks that will play out.
He said it's not one of his top priorities. He'll get around to it when he gets around to it. I think he'll learn that probably in a minority government, it should be one of the second or third things he does to get it out of the way. I can't see how it's going to pass. I think it would have been difficult even in a majority parliament, but definitely with a minority parliament, you add up the Bloc, you add up the NDP, and you add up the parts of the Liberal Party who are supportive of gay marriage, and the parts of the Conservative Party who are now in support of gay marriage. There's no way it'll go forward.
The Globe and Mail newspaper backs up Mitchell's predictions. Their recent poll of the new parliament showed 153 MPs in support of same-sex marriage, 136 opposed, and 19 undecided. But the fact that equal marriage may not be in imminent danger creates a unique problem for queer activists who oppose the Conservative Party based on its anti-gay record. Lori Aaron explains.
The public seems to be ready to buy the idea that he actually is moderate. And to the extent that he continues to project that image, to act according to that costume, if you will, that he's got on, it's really going to be an uphill battle to convince Canadians otherwise. I think if he does manage to pass the unequal marriage motion, that would actually work against him. And, you know, I think it's also up to us to point out the many things that he does to roll back the clock on equality. For example, Canada's position internationally. Canada, certainly for the past 12 years, has been a very strong advocate for our equality internationally. Stephen Harper can change that with a phone call.
Mr. Harper has one shot at this.
Gary Mitchell.
And if he blows it, and what I mean by blowing it is allowing, as the leader of the party, the social conservatives to be front and center and dictate the agenda, he will blow it. If Harper moves and actually does anything that would take away our rights, I predict that the conservative movement and party will be finished in this country.
For This Way Out, I'm Heather Kitching in Vancouver.
Hi, this is Jimmy Somerville, and you're listening to This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian and, I would imagine, transgender radio magazine.
Want to talk to me? Want to make love to me? So come on. You want to scream tonight? Want all your dreams realized? So come on.
When the legendary Sydney gay and lesbian Mardi Gras throws its gala event this year, the legendary Jimmy Somerville will be the headline act. The openly gay Somerville came to fame with mid-1980s Bronski Beat hits Small Town Boy and Tell Me Why. He's also bringing his new Evolve show to Sydney and Melbourne, joined by each city's gay and lesbian choir. This Way Out correspondent John Frame shared a pre-tour and pre-bedtime cup of tea with Somerville, chatting about his CD Home Again, the nonsense of age of consent laws, boy band outings, and his heartfelt belief in humanity.
In the liner notes for your most recent album, Home Again, which came out in November 2004, you make the little comment after thanking a few people on the back of the notes, you say, oh, and thank God I'm an atheist. That doesn't mean that you're not a spiritual person, though, does it?
Yeah, no, I'm kind of annoyed now that I put atheist, because in some senses, that's me saying that I actually don't believe in something that kind of exists. So that kind of, like, I was a bit annoyed actually for putting that, because like, I thought I should have kind of found some other expression. But in a sense, and I'm not a spiritual person, I'm more of a kind of, because in a sense, it's like, again, it's like trying to find other words to express it and other meanings. And so in the end, I'm just a believer in people, and I'm just a believer in emotions, and I'm just such a believer in people that if someone was to kind of, like, you know, bash me over the head, like, you know, and then come back and bash me over the head again, I would still believe that there is something good in that person, and that person is a good person deep down or whatever. So I really do believe in people. I just think, if you stop believing and if you stop having some kind of, passion and compassion, then you just may as well give up.
Are you still the same person you were when you were 16?
Oh, definitely not, you know, definitely not. I'm not such an idealist as I was, and sometimes I know that I wasted so much energy, and so much of my energy went into being such an idealist when I was younger, so I don't waste my energy on that anymore. So, but I still put a lot of my energies into really just being positive and still having my kind of, like, my principles and stuff like that.
Tell me why!
The first Bronski Beat album was Age of Consent, and in Queensland, we're the only state in Australia that has an age of consent that's higher for anal intercourse than for any other sexual activity. So it's 18 instead of 16 for everything else.
No, it's crazy, really, isn't it? I mean, it's just so, and it's just, and you just know that in some senses that these kind of, like, these laws are really influenced by kind of, like, by religion, and they're influenced in biblical terms. It's just, that's really what I think where most of these laws come from. You know, it's the same in certain states in the United States as well, you know, that kind of thing. Again, it's just in the place in the 21st century, but, you know, that definitely is an uphill kind of battle, because those people again, they're real believers, and they believe in what they believe in, and so you really do have a battle on your hands.
Mm-hmm. Since the last time I spoke to you, which was February 98, we've had people like Elton John's properly come out to the world, like George Michael sort of got exposed to the world, but more importantly, we've had some young men from boy bands come out and actually preempt the press and say that I'm gay, I'm happy, and in fact, I'm in love.
Sadly, most of the young ones from the boy bands didn't really preempt the press. Basically, what had to happen was the press was saying, well, you know what? If you don't do it, we'll do it. So how do you want to do it? Do you want to do it and come out and be proud? Or do you want us to just kind of like put one of those kind of like mucky stories in the paper? So in some senses, they had to do it. I just think it's a kind of really, it's a kind of almost like a kind of twisted kind of politics in there. It's almost like sort of saying, well, do you know what? You just don't play these games with the public. You either are or you're not. Get on with it. And I kind of like that in a kind of twisted way. Because in the end, it is. It's like, you know, just don't play games with the public. You know, it's like, just as long as you're kind of like possibly entertaining them and you're good at what you do, then, you know, they'll just let you go on with it, really. And I just think, you know, and in the end, it's like, it's to yourself as well, because you just mess with your own mind and you just end up just being a very kind of unhappy person.
Jimmy Somerville, it's been a pleasure talking to you, and this has been John Fram on behalf of This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. May you have a safe trip and a great tour. We look forward to seeing you.
I shall do. Thank you very much.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Sherry Lund, John Beaupre, Rex Walkner, Graham Underhill, Heather Kitching, and John Frame contributed program material. Thanks also to Steve Pride. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen online to This Way Out exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to find out how you can help keep us on the air and choose from some unique This Way Out queer history and culture CDs that you can own as our thanks. That's thiswayout.org. To sign up for our weekly emailed program information messages and or our monthly This Way Out updates, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on KUMD Duluth, Minnesota, 5CST Southwest Adelaide, South Australia, Boise Community Radio, Boise, Idaho, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Do stay tuned.